We read at the very end of chapter 7, after Jesus has finished his Sermon on the Mount, that the crowds were astonished at Jesus' teaching. That is a very strong word, but it's very apt. The crowds had never heard the like of Jesus before. They were amazed at his authority, we read, chapter 7, verse 29. He wasn't like anyone around at that time. Even though the scribes and the Pharisees knew the Old Testament, they didn't know it and preach it and apply it like Jesus did. Well, now Matthew is introducing us, the readers, to Jesus' miracles. He systematically lists various miracles that he did, each of them amazing and astonishing in their own ways. And Matthew now, his aim is to show how astonishing not just Jesus' words are, but his actions are as well, to convince his primarily Jewish readers, remember, he was writing this for Jews, to convince them that Jesus really was the Messiah, the chosen one that they were expecting, that they were waiting for. And he starts then this systematic account of Jesus' miracles with his healing of a leper. That's the word for a man with leprosy or other skin diseases. And it's really a wonderfully beautiful incident that pictures so clearly what Jesus does for sinners today as well. I want to look at this this incident just with three simple headings. And firstly, cut off. According to the law of Moses in Leviticus 13 and 14, part of which we read earlier on, those with certain serious skin diseases, like leprosy and other diseases as well, were unclean. That's familiar to most of us, I guess, that Old Testament concept. It's uncertain whether leprosy, as we understand it today in the modern world, is included in the law of Leviticus 13, and we're not sure exactly what disease this leper had. It might have been leprosy, or it could have been something else, perhaps something like psoriasis or others that I'm not very familiar with. But what is clear is that to be called a leper and so labelled unclean, this man had to have a chronic, serious, untreatable skin disease. It wasn't something that would be passing. So serious, more serious than things that we might be familiar with today. And this skin disease then, put him in the category of being unclean. A priest would have had to examine him and found his condition to be more than skin deep, as we read in Leviticus 13:3. So not something that would be treatable or have passed in a few days. And he was pronounced then unclean. And for that person, for this person then, for this man, that was perhaps the worst thing that could have happened to him. He, according to Leviticus 13, 45 and 46, he had to cry out, unclean, unclean. How embarrassing, how shameful for that person. He had to wear torn clothes. He had to have his hair worn messy. He had to, if it was a man, he would have had to cover his upper lip, which means cover his moustache. And these kind of things, their significance is that they were things that were done if you were in mourning. This unclean person was in mourning. Worst of all, though, was that statement that we read, his dwelling shall be outside the camp. That was the worst. It meant that people such as this leper here weren't allowed any contact with others. They had to leave their home. If they tried to approach anyone or come near the city, they would have been told in no uncertain terms, stay away. People would have run from him. But his dwelling shall be outside the camp means so much more than he had to leave his home and be alone. For a Jew, their whole identity was bound up with being with God's people, worshipping God. And being outside of the camp of Israel meant that that core part of their identity wasn't there anymore. So this man, then, this leper, I don't want us to skip over this because it's so important that he really was cut off in both senses, cut off from society and cut off from the worship of God, cut off from God's people. And it's significant then that he had to do things that signified mourning. He wasn't really alive anymore. He would have felt that. He would have felt not dead, but not really living, almost suffering a living death, as one of the commentators put it. Like Adam and Eve suffered a living death when they were expelled from the Garden of Eden. Their life, in any meaningful sense, was bound up with being with God. And that's where these rules then of cleanness and uncleanness go back to, really. The Garden of Eden, everything that happened after Adam and Eve sinned. I just want to spend a couple more minutes going into why being unclean was such a big deal and why it had to happen that someone deemed unclean had to be banished from God's people, from the camp of Israel in the Old Testament. When sin came into the world, Adam and Eve were expelled from the garden. They were no longer able to be with God, and they lost the life that they had with him. They'd become unclean, not able to dwell in God's holy presence. Perhaps I ought to clarify, uncleanness then wasn't to do with hygiene as such. That's our modern connotation, isn't it? It's to do with being physically dirty, whatever, you know, dirt you get under your fingernails, they're not clean anymore. But that's not what this uncleanness is. It's theological. Sin makes human beings unclean. Sin made Adam and Eve unclean. But God didn't banish people from his presence forever. He chose a people for himself, the people of Israel, to be with him. He would be their God and they would dwell with him. But how could that happen? God's purity and his holiness and his righteous anger at sin mean that people couldn't simply come as if nothing was wrong anymore. They couldn't dwell with him like Adam and Eve used to do in the garden. There had to be degrees of separation, and that's what the rules in Leviticus about clean and unclean were all about. You know how when the tabernacle was set up, when the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness, there was the very middle of the tabernacle, and in the later temple, that the middle part was the most holy place, the holy of holies. That was the highest degree of holiness in the camp of Israel. That was where God made his dwelling. That's what he said, between the cherubim on the Ark of the Covenant. And into this very holy place, into the very presence of God, only the high priests could go, and only once a year. The tabernacle itself, the outer courts, was next in the sort of degrees of holiness. And there, the priests in general could work and offer regular sacrifices. So we've gone from holy to the holiest to holy, and then the place, the regular camp of Israel was clean, if you like. That was the clean place where the rest of the people lived. They were governed by rules, by laws, to ritually set them apart from the nations around them, making them theologically clean. If you like, Israel was like a quarantine zone, governed by a system of protection to keep the outside world from coming in and having contact with God's holiness. And so we come then to people who didn't fit that clean mold. People with skin diseases like this man. These kind of diseases were obvious outward signs of the fall. And in a way then, this person wasn't whole. They had the fragrance of death in them. such people couldn't stay in the camp. They had to be cut off as long as the disease remained to maintain this cleanliness in the camp of God's people. And so for this leper then, and other people with skin diseases, there was no cure. Leviticus clearly implies that the sufferer simply had to wait until they were, until God saw fit to heal them from that disease, to cleanse them from it. And this man's situation then in Matthew chapter 8 is a striking picture of what sin does to a person. It's not just something that is minor and can be treated with a quick dose of cream to get rid of the mark. It's more than skin deep. It affects the whole person. And it means that we by nature, in our sins, in our uncleanness, are cut off from God. Not really alive, dead in trespasses and sins, not what we're made to be. This leper was supposed to be with the people of God, with the Israelites, participating in glorifying and serving God with his fellow worshippers. And sinners, then, living in sin is not what you and I were created for. We were created to know God. And so I hope then that you can see something of this man's desperate plight, cut off from God and without hope as long as this disease remained on him. So, cut off. But then secondly, confident. They're all C's, by the way, my points. Confident. It's no wonder that Matthew in verse 2 uses the word behold to introduce us to this leper. Matthew often uses the word behold to introduce us to something that's amazing, something wonderful that's about to happen, something to really take notice of. And with all I've said before about this man and how cut off he was, I hope you can see that there is something astounding, astonishing about this man coming, not just to be near people, but bowing right before Jesus Christ. That would have been so hard for this man, living with this sort of social stigma. People who would have repulsed him and viewed him kind of superstitiously, really, as if God was particularly angry with this person, as if he sinned in a particular way that made him worse than the rest. It wasn't true, of course, but people, as I said, would have repulsed him and run away if he'd reproached them. But here he is, coming before Jesus Christ. Why? Why does he do that? Why does he change where he should be, isolated, cut off? Why does he come into the presence of people and into the presence of Jesus himself? Well, he has confidence. He's confident that if Jesus wills, he can make a difference, that he can do something for him. He can cleanse him and take away his leprosy. Perhaps he's heard from someone else. Maybe a fellow leper has told him a tale of what he's heard Jesus doing. This isn't Jesus' first miracle, of course. The leper calls Jesus Lord, which in itself is quite striking. I think it must mean more than sir, certainly in this instance. And if this leper didn't know that Jesus was the Master, was the Son of God, he at least knew that there was something special about him, that he had a power and authority that no one else had. So this man there didn't have hope in anyone else. He certainly couldn't heal himself, but in Jesus he saw hope. And so he has confidence to come to Jesus, despite everything, despite his situation. Notice as well that this isn't a brash confidence. It's not a pride. I mean, he has nothing to be proud in, and he certainly recognizes that. Notice the humble attitude that he has. He says in verse 2, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. Jesus has said in his Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 7, 21 and 22, that not everyone who calls him Lord will get into the kingdom of heaven. There are those who come to Jesus or who only claim to come to Jesus, but never really come to him, aren't humble, and don't really cling to him and rely upon him. There are hypocrites, even in churches. There are deceivers who deceive themselves and others. People who today claim to be Christ's followers, claim to have been converted, but wind up being cast into hell to pay for their own sins. But this man, in contrast to those who say, Lord, Lord, and Jesus will cast away, he comes humbly. Lord, if you will. He knows that he's got nothing good in himself, but he pleads Jesus' grace and his mercy on him. This is the very opposite of what we're like by nature, isn't it? We like to think that we're managing okay, thank you very much, that we're all right by ourselves. And I don't know, maybe you this morning need to look at this man's attitude to Jesus and to humble yourself before Jesus. Ask him to show you that without him, you have no hope. You are in just as dire a situation as this leper. Ask him to have mercy on you, to remove your uncleanness, not just from your physical body, but from the sin that clings to you without Christ at the moment. And if you ask him, then he will. Jesus is gracious and merciful. Whoever comes to me, he says, John 6, 37, I will never cast out. So cut off and confident. Thirdly, finally, clean. This is the climax of this story, isn't it? Mark, in his account of this miracle, spells out in Mark 1:41 that Jesus was moved with pity for this man. And we see it, even though Matthew doesn't say that, we see his pity in action here, don't we? Jesus touched him and he spoke to him. That's astonishing. People would not have seen anything like that. Rather than withdrawing, as everyone else did, Jesus went to him. He reached out and touched him and spoke to him. Totally unthinkable for an Old Testament Jew. Being in contact with such a person made the toucher unclean themselves. With all that entailed, it would cut that person off from the community of worshippers. I mean, Jesus didn't have to do that. Even once he decided that he was willing to heal that man, he could have been healed without that touch. He could have been healed, of course, without Jesus saying, be cleansed. But this touch of Jesus is such a lovely feature of this miracle and underlines his real love and compassion for the unclean, and for sinners. Think back, if you're old enough, to 1987 and the images of Princess Diana shaking hands with AIDS sufferers. It made big news. People were marveling at her compassion for the sick because she didn't just speak to them and meet with them or look in at their hospital beds, but she was willing to shake hands with people. That really struck a chord, didn't it? Because there's something special about touch with someone that you love or with someone who can comfort you. Some of us in this church are huggers and some aren't huggers. I know that, but we all understand, don't we, that touch is a personal thing. Sometimes an arm around the shoulder or a hug without any words is what does the job that words can't do, and it brings comfort, perhaps to people who are in pain or who are sorrowing. Think of how little children run to their parents. They don't want words, they just want a hug, don't they? A touch can bring comfort. And here Jesus touches this leper, probably the first touch that this man had had in years. No one would have touched him for years for fear of him. Think how this man must have loved Jesus after he touched him. Certainly after he healed him, but touching him. It reinforced to this man and to us as well that here was someone who didn't just talk the talk, but he really walked the walk as well. His actions showed who he was. As I said, contact with a leper like this should have brought uncleanness on the toucher. Jesus should have become unclean. And as the crowd watched this, there would have been a sharp intake of breath. What's going on here? What's he doing? Doesn't he know what's going to happen to him? But instead of Jesus becoming unclean, the man becomes clean. The toucher doesn't become contaminated. The disease becomes banished. The contaminated man becomes clean. Jesus' cleanness is a far more powerful contagion than any dirt that we bring to him. That's a quote from someone, not my own words. Jesus' cleanness, I love it. Jesus' cleanness is a far more powerful contagion than any dirt that we can bring to him. He's overflowing, not just with goodwill, but with power as well, to do something for this man in his uncleanness, and for you and for me in our sin as well. And immediately, his leprosy was gone. He was healed. However long he'd been a leper for, however dirty he felt, or however ceremonially unclean he was, it didn't matter. A touch and a word from Jesus, and it was sorted. At this point, I don't want to skip over verse 4 as well. Matthew is writing to Jews primarily, and Matthew wants to show his Jewish readers that Jesus did uphold the law of Moses. He wants his readers to take on board that Jesus' ministry wasn't about scrapping what had gone before and starting afresh as such. He didn't make void the Old Testament law or destroy it or say that this man should now go ahead and just forget the priest, forget Judaism, and just come and follow me. No, here was true Judaism. Jesus was the fulfiller of all that had come before. So go and show the priests, he told to the man. Go and show them. Do what your duty is now that you've been made clean. Show them that now you're fit to have them offer sacrifices for you so that you can join the people of God again. And bear witness to the people. Notice Jesus says, show yourself to the priest, offer the gift that Moses commanded for a proof to them. I think that proof is for the priests, sure, but for the people as well. Proof that now the reality was here. The sacrifices were types, were pictures of what Jesus came to do. But here is the fulfiller of Judaism. He was what all of the Old Testament was pointing to and waiting for. Well, Jesus enabled then this man to join the people of God again. There was nothing that separated him anymore, no uncleanness that meant that he couldn't come into the camp. He was no longer a living, dead person, if you like. He could live again. And this is the very heart, isn't it, of what Jesus came to do and what he's doing today. Making a way for unclean sinners to enter into God's presence. Something that the law couldn't do, but pointed to Jesus and his ability to do it. And of course, for people today, for expanded Israel, those clean and unclean ceremonial rituals aren't what's important. Those boundaries have been abrogated by Jesus. It's not outward cleansing that makes a person a Christian, but inward removal of dirt, the dirt of sin. And like the leper, you and I can't do it ourselves. There is no cure outside of Jesus for sinfulness. Only he can make a person alive. Only he can make you alive, make you what you were meant to be, a worshipper of God. fulfilled, joyful, satisfied in your life by taking your sin, even those things that you have tried for so long to get rid of. You can't do it yourself. Only Jesus can. He removes your uncleanness, your barrier to coming into God's presence, and your barrier to heaven as well. He gives you his cleanness through his touch, if you like. At the cross, Jesus took the uncleanness on himself of all his people. He became sin to remove that sin from us. He suffered shame so that you and I would never be put to shame. He was rejected so that we could be brought near. And he was taken outside the camp like an outcast, like someone who was cut off, so that every believer can be brought into the people of God. Amen.